G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Harry? Yes.
Somehow I couldn't log in this morning, and I'm just questioning whether someone's been fiddling with the controls.
Oh, anyway. So you're blaming others, are you?
Well, it's clearly not my fault.
What?
I just hit three buttons, and anyway, I'm here. What a great start.
Great to have Adam White with us. So on Mondays and Fridays around these parts, we engage the company of a very learned man who's looking like an Xbox gamer at the moment in his place with his setup. It's great to have former Bombers champion and these days manager to the Stars, Adam Ramanaska, as part of the team. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. I find it remarkable that a man can't walk down his stairs or walk out one door, get to another room and be on time. I just don't understand it.
It's an unusual world we live in, Adam. It's an unusual world.
The reality is I can't argue with you. I couldn't work out what was going on. Anyway, I'm here.
Overslept? The dog ate your homework? Which one was it?
No, I was around. I was up and about. But I just couldn't log in properly.
Well, you're here now. You're here now. So we can focus on all the good things that come with you being a part of the team, which is very important.
That's right.
Very important. Now, well, I'm looking forward to chatting to Phil a little bit later on about the world of US sport. But there is some sport going on at the moment, and the best sport yesterday was Riley O'Brien. Just brilliant stuff from our man from Adelaide. What about Riley? Adam Ramanaskas, as the manager to players these days, what were your first thoughts when you saw that Riley had leaked his notes, his competitive competition notes for playing on Nick Natanui this week for the Adelaide Crows, and he leaked them from his notes, part of his phone, so he told us, to Twitter, which is an unusual thing to do.
Well, initially you sort of had a giggle and you thought to yourself, did he do that on purpose? Is he trying to do this to get a bit of interest in the game on the weekend? But then you listen to his reasoning and excuse, and then the follow-up social media post that he made. Okay, you accept the responsibility and you accept the reasons, but I actually really enjoyed it. If that's how that young man is preparing for a game, all credit goes to him. You know, if that's the way he fires up and that's the way he wants to tackle Nick Natanui. Now, obviously that's usually in private and you'd usually read that before a game, but in this case it's got posted to social media. Now, obviously there's a pressure on him, but there's also pressure on Nick Nat now to perform.
Yeah,
and if you listen to Riley in his second post, he talks about Nick Nat being the premier ruckman of the competition and somebody that he greatly respects. But, you know, now it's, I think for both of them, it's almost put up or shut up, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it probably is. For those that aren't aware of what happened, it basically is...
You want to read out, can you read out the his game plan, Half?
Yes,
Riley's
I can.
Game plan against Nick
Nat? I'm going to read it for you. So... this was on Twitter from Riley O'Brien yesterday. West Coast, and he's got little dot points. Beat Nick Nat. Run off him hard. He's lazy and unfit. We'll have a field day getting ball and marking everything. Get to front, have Grunt around the ground, and get after ball on deck. Beat him in this area. Centre bounce, have clear plan and execute. Thank. And then just, I don't know what happened there with thank. But, yeah, that's what happened. And he showed us his phone a little bit later on. This is the audio from the vision that he posted with his explanation of how that got to Twitter yesterday. Let's have a listen to the big ruckman from Adelaide.
My phone has decided to cark it, and I've had an absolute mare on my social media today. It tweeted some of my game notes in my notes on my iPhone. That I take these notes every week before the game to try and pump myself up and get a bit of confidence going into the game. Make a few things up, as you can see on the notes, to try and give myself confidence. Coming up this week against probably who I think is the best ruckman in the competition at the moment, Nick Nat, I was just trying to get some confidence and get going. So I've really put the pressure on myself now. So I've really got to walk the walk this week and try and get a kick against the superstar that is Nick Nat. So we'll see how we go.
So that was the explanation from Big Riley yesterday.
So really the only part of that tweet is that Nick Nat's unfit. Yep. Other than that, it's all motivation for Riley. How he wants to play.
Even that's the things you tell yourself to give yourself a chance and to pump yourself up and to know that you can win that battle, whatever that is. You tell yourself stuff all the time. This goes, and I immediately thought from my world of the Stacey Livingston and Taylor Harris situation earlier in the year in the AFLW, yep. where Stacey said, I knew that if on the ground she was no good, she was useless, was the word I think she used. These are the things that you tell yourself when you're coming up against an opponent that has an intimidation factor. Nick Natanui has that. You've got to find a way to psych yourself into believing you can. And if that's what it takes for Riley to make notes, be they true or not, it actually doesn't matter. It's got nothing to do with reality. It's what you believe.
Well, I'll ask both of you. Was there anything that he wrote that was untrue?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it is or not.
We watch him play. We watch him play every week. Do you think that he's lazy?
No, I don't think he's lazy. I think his follow-up around the contest is better than or as good as any ruckman in the competition.
In that first sort of next phase of play?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So from the tap to that 5-metre radius half, he's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wouldn't have cared if you said, it looks like he's only got half a leg and I'll be able to jump over him. It doesn't matter. It actually doesn't matter. They're his notes. They're clearly not meant for public consumption. What he tells himself is irrelevant. It's what he needs to do to get himself up.
It takes me to another point, Harth, just about Whitey and his golf and what he sort of says to himself or what he writes down before a round. When he's going out to bat for cricket, is there a couple of mental notes or does he take the iPhone with him when he bats?
Well, one thing we know is he's not focused on the opposition. There's a lot of self-talk. For our man. He's not too worried about anyone else in the vicinity. He's worried about just the one athlete at the time. So he's not focused on the opposition, Rammer.
Well, there may be a particular golfer that Whitey plays with quite often that might be in his head at the moment. That Whitey just... This person feels like he's got him. He feels like he's got him. They're members together at Heidelberg. And he just feels like he's got him.
Mind games.
Like Whitey's walked off the course a couple of times. He's used the excuse of, I've got to pick the kids up from school.
Got to pick the kids up.
So there's been excuses.
Shocking.
Like, that is incorrect. Now,
shocking.
I almost sue you for that sort of commentary. I walked off the course 2 weeks ago because we were playing behind four of the slowest individuals in the history of the world. It took us 2 hours and 20 minutes to play 9 holes.
It's okay.
It was muddy. It was rubbish conditions.
You knew that going.
I did have to pick up children, and the third part of that was I was playing poorly, and my motivation levels were very low. And I thought, you know what? I'm hating this. I'm just walking off.
Walked off.
So you see where I'm going with this, Whitey? With this half?
Yeah.
There was nerves. This particular person got into his head.
Please,
and then
please.
He's used the old, I've got to get the kids. I've got to get the kids. Like, we can't use our kids as excuses all the time.
Not all the time. I've used them plenty of times, but not all the time. Not all the time. It is amazing how often you can use them if you need them. If there's something that's not quite suiting your plans, I've got to go and get the kids, or one of the kids is homesick, I can't get there, and Bex at work. I just can't help you.
Were you a person that wrote notes down before a game, before you played? Did you?
Not physical notes, knowing
what you had to do?
Yeah, no, not physical notes. I would go through a bit of analysis pre-game and during the week and sort of know after who I was supposed to be playing on, which back in the old days you could sort of plan. I would work out who that was and how we're going to play, but not so much physical notes. I wouldn't put notes in my diary or a little book that I had, but I'd have conversations with coaches and work out how we're going to do it. Yeah. What did you do?
Well, it depended what role I was playing. If I had a free-flowing attacking role, I was thinking about myself and what I needed to do. But there was a number of times when I actually had a job to do. And what I'd do probably about 10 minutes before the game, I'd go and speak to one of our coaches.
Yep.
And just get a couple of reminders about what that particular player did well and what I needed to do to make sure I stopped him. And that tended to work because had narrowed my focus just before the game where, okay, I was ready to go mentally, physically. Sometimes you didn't get the job done, of course, because there's so many great players in the AFL, but other times it really worked.
All right, so good luck to Riley this week. There'll be a lot of people watching, as you say. Dale Lewis tweeted yesterday that it's one of the great promotions of all time for a contest. Yeah. Like real Don King sort of stuff, he's saying.
Well, we've got Adelaide sitting on the bottom, and we've got West Coast sitting, what are they, third or fourth bottom, Whitey?
Yeah, but they're coming, the Eagles. They are coming.
I was going to say. We were talking about this on Gareth's program yesterday about the Eagles, and we all thought they were in crisis a few weeks ago. They have one win against Sydney, who I don't think too many people think they're going to make the eight, and they're only impressive after quarter time. But you always said, you think, oh, gee, they're only a game off third, West Coast, and they're about to go across to Western Australia and play at home for about 28 weeks in a row. So they're in a pretty good spot because they don't really have injury concerns. Luke Shuey's done a hamstring at the moment, which isn't ideal, but they haven't got any long-termers really that I can think of that's going to stop them or give them an excuse for them not to be contending at the right time of the season.
That would make sense. That would make sense.
I do want to talk just briefly about the cricket overnight.
You know,
it's my thing. But the West Indies did quite well. In fact, they did very well. They bowled England out for 204. West Indies, after 19 overs, won for 57. So, again, it was a rain-shortened day. But I really want to pay credit to Jason Holder. And, you know, I've talked to him about him a lot in the last couple of years. He's sort of a guy that goes under the radar. He's been captain of the West Indies for quite some time. But he took 6 for 42 overnight to essentially rout England and give them a great chance of really pushing ahead in this test match. Geez, a good player. He's been averaging with the ball 14 over the last sort of 2.5 years. He just turns up to play every time he represents his test nation, whatever you want to call it. It's about five nations, obviously. And not just with the ball, but also with the batting, that sort of 7 or 8 slot. But 6 for 42 was very, very impressive overnight. I wanted to mention that.
No, it's fair enough. Shannon Gabriel, the other one, destroying England there, 4 for 62. So the two bowlers taking all 10 wickets between them, which is unusual these days. Used to see it a bit, but unusual these days. But as you say, yeah, 204 all out. 1 for 57 in reply. The Windies have put themselves in a pretty good position after day two in a rain-interrupted match already in the first test at the Rose Bowl.
And the other sort of talking point in the lead-up to the test match was, would they play Mark Wood or Stuart Broad? And they did go with Mark Wood because they see him as being almost like the next Brett Lee in a lot of ways. He's been around for a little while. We think of Jofra Archer as someone that can really step it up with the pace, but Mark Wood's not dissimilar. And he was bowling as fast as 153 in coolish conditions last night. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, none for 8 off his 3.3 for Mark Wood. And Jofra Archer, 6 overs, none for 20. In reply, Jimmy Anderson, the wicket taker there, 1 for 17 after his 8 overs. Just on Jason Holder, I was reading a quick viz stat this morning on him. In the last 2.5 years since he's been averaging 14, Whitey, no one swings the ball more or seams the ball more than Jason Holder. So he's got the ball moving and swinging like a Danny Dore at the moment, and batsmen are finding it very difficult to get a hold of him. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on him through the series. It's certainly a good start, 6 of 42, and set your country up, or your nation, your test nation, yeah, essentially how you refer to that, up in the on the way series against England, who, when you're not expected to do too much, it's a very positive start. They'll get a lot of energy out of that, the West Indies. Just wonder if Phil Murphy is a fan of Modern Family. He's the host of ESPN Sports Centre. I reckon he might be. He joins us on the line on The Breakfast Club. G'day, Phil.
Hey, boys, I love Modern Family. You know, I can't remember the actor's name, but there's a Phil Dunphy character, which is way too close to Phil Murphy for my liking.
Yes, he's got some quirks, has Phil Dunphy. So if that's you, Phil Murphy, then we're okay with that. We think that's good business. Hey, lots to talk to you about. We haven't spoken to you for a while, and we touched earlier in the week on the news coming through from the Kansas City Chiefs, that Patrick Mahomes signed a new 10-year deal. Can you just explain to us exactly what it's worth and how it all came to pass that he is now the richest player in the history of the NFL?
He is. He's the richest player in American sport history if all of the incentives come into pass. As far as what it's worth, if he were to get injured tomorrow and never play another down of football, it would be worth $140 million U.S. Quick math for me, that's about $250 million Australia dollars. Now, if he plays out the entirety of the deal just by playing and being on the Chiefs roster until 2032, I believe, because he has 2 years left on his current contract, yep, and then the 10-year extension kicks in, then it's worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $450 to $470 million, depending on how the roster bonuses work themselves out. Now we're talking somewhere in the ballpark of $630 million Australia. And if all the incentives come to pass, and that's various things about winning Super Bowls and winning league MVP awards, well, you can tack on another $25 million to that over the life of the deal, bringing it over $500 million U.S. I believe it's just over $503 million U.S., which is somewhere in the ballpark of 715 Aussie dollars, given the current exchange rate. So more money than you or I or all of us collectively could ever count in our lives is going to the 24-year-old quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs.
And how's it been received? Is it one that gets public approval, or is it condemnation because of spending that much money?
No, in fact, a lot of people are saying the Chiefs might get a good deal with it because it's such a long-term deal and it's not tied to the salary cap. So if the NFL continues to grow at its current rate, the most the Chiefs will be paying on this deal in terms of annual salary and roster bonuses will be about 5 to 6 years from now, when Mahomes is in his late 20s, early 30s, which as a quarterback is very much his prime. And then it'll taper off comparatively to the end. I'm taper off because we'll still be getting north of $25 to $30 million a year. But over the life of the deal, he still has the ability to renegotiate, because if he gets 7 years in and suddenly it's below market value, well, like anybody else who's unhappy with their contract, he can decide to opt out and hold out rather, and renegotiate the deal. So it's a very player-friendly deal, but a lot of people are saying that the Chiefs may have gotten a good deal on it just because of how the projected TV rights and the international rights in particular for the NFL are expected to continue to grow. I can't say you'll see other contracts in at this level soon, but 3, 5, 7 years from now, the top players in the league may be making this money, and because they've locked in Mahomes for 10 seasons, the Chiefs may actually end up with the better. The real debate is how many Super Bowls would they need to win over the next 12 seasons to justify the money. And most people are saying, between 2 and 4. Easier said than done, but the kid's already 24 years old, has a league MVP, has a Super Bowl MVP, has a Super Bowl ring. Not a bad resume thus far.
Phil, we were actually talking about Patrick over the last couple of weeks for obvious reasons, and it's Super Bowls and Super Bowl rings are one thing, but the way he plays means that he will be, or that the Kansas City Chiefs will be, an entertaining team to watch week in, week out. So it's not just about titles, it's about the entertainment that he generates with the way he plays.
Oh, he's an electrifying player, and by every account, he's an outstanding young man. I say young man, my goodness, I sound old. But, I mean, he's just an outstanding human being. He's very gracious with his money. All kinds of accounts of when he goes into a Kansas City restaurant, oftentimes he'll get a note like, hey, your bill's been taken care of. He'll pay for the whole place. That's happened on multiple occasions. So he's great for that community, and objectively, he's a fun player to watch. A crazy stat that will blow your mind, and you can go ahead and confirm this, at the NFL Combine, which is the, annual, the AFL has something similar, where they go out and they test the player's speed and all of those things. When they're coming out of college, before they get drafted into the NFL, he ran the same 40 time as Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning and Patrick Mahomes ran the same 40 time. Game speed is a different element, because that guy is electric on the field. So something, when he puts on that helmet on Sundays, there's something just different about him. And now Kansas City has him now for the next decade.
I wouldn't have thought anyone would have run the 40 time of Peyton Manning, Rammer.
Oh, no. No way. No way. So, Phil, tell us about the restarts for the NBA and Major League Baseball. Obviously, positive tests are increasing in both baseball and the NBA, but also in society over in the States. But both seem to be pushing ahead. I know the minor league baseball season has been cancelled, but Major League Baseball and the NBA still pushing forward?
Yeah, they are, and they've built into their restart plan a threshold, if you will, for positive tests. You know, for the NBA, they're going with a bubble environment where they're bringing all the players to Orlando, Disney World, putting them at three separate hotels, and keeping them quarantined from any outside influence. They're allowed to socialize. And once they're settled on campus and they pass a number of tests, they're able to socialize with regard to social distancing, staying 2 meters apart, you know, with teammates and other people in their bubble. And then obviously when they interact on the basketball court, you can't help but, you know, violate that social distancing if you're going up for a rebound, for example. But the NBA has already had a number of players opt out. You know, the Nets aren't bringing four players down, two of whom had positive tests, two of whom just opted out for health concerns. The Washington Wizards, top two scorers, are not going down. So the NBA has given these guys the ability to opt out of the bubble. They've given them the ability, certainly, you know, with a positive test, to do so with the league's blessing. But the idea is that once they're in the bubble and they don't have any outside influence, that, well, if you're safe, you're safe. But then Adam Silver conceded just days ago, hey, our bubble may have some holes in it, to which I would say, but bubbles don't have holes. That's the whole idea of a bubble. But it does seem like there is a protocol in place. They put out a 108-page manual as far as what will happen if somebody tests positive, what will we do? And it'll be, you know, days of quarantine, and they have to pass multiple tests, and even thereafter, it's another 4 to 7 days of quarantine within the bubble, so being stuck in their rooms. And then the games will start 30 July, 8 regular season games, playoffs tipping mid-August. NBA Finals could go as late as 13 October. So you look at a team like the Raptors, who are coming from Toronto, Canada, crossing international lines. They've been in Florida airspace, but if they were to make it to Game 7 of the Finals, they'll be in Florida airspace for 114 days consecutively. That's a lot of time to be away from your families. And, you know, for a lot of these guys who've tried to plan families, this is their off season. A lot of them have significant others who are expecting children. You know, Gordon Hayward's already said, I'm going to have to leave in September because my wife's having a baby. You contrast that with Major League Baseball's plan. Major League Baseball has no bubble. They are 30 teams over 28 cities of math served around the United States, some of which are currently being decimated by the coronavirus. Others are in comparatively better shape, but their plan has a lot more holes in it and a lot more risk attached. And the thing with them is it's not a restart. It's a start. They never started playing games, but they've reduced 162-game season to 60 games, mostly because of labor disputes. It was more of dollars and cents than player safety. But now they're seeing issues with player safety where teams are getting collectively tested for this virus and not getting results for 5 or 6 days. So they're having to shut down team facilities because they say, we don't know who's fit, who's healthy, and who's not. And every team but one has had at least one player test positive for the coronavirus since they've reconvened. And just given the statistics in markets like Phoenix and Dallas and Houston and Miami and Denver, where they have teams, in Los Angeles, where there are two teams, San Diego, we're not done with there. So that house of cards is in far worse shape than the NBA. Their first pitch is 23 July, so they'll start a week before the NBA, and there's a growing pessimism that they'll be able to get in the entire season.
You know what we can do now, Remo?
We're not, are we?
Yeah, baby! What is world famous 7-question quiz is upon us. Time for you to get involved. Give us a call, 1-300-652-927 on a Friday morning. This is a chance to set your weekend up. That's what it is. It's all thanks to Western Premiership star Jason Johnson and his magnificent team at Dynamic Foods giving away a $100 gift voucher. Yep, $100 voucher to the winner of the quiz. Healthy, nutritious meals that are supporting local farmers, cooked by world-class chefs, Rambo, as you well know. And the best part is, delivered straight to your door. We're in the middle of lockdown. This is the best system in the history of mankind. Dynamic.com.au. Or give Jason a call himself, the home number, 8669-0587. Try not to wake the kids if you can avoid it. Quiz rules, of course there are rules. Don't tell any stories. We won't be sharing any context, Rama. No jokes to be told, no fumbling and no bumbling, no analysis of how a contestant comes to the answer they settle on. No commenting on the suburbs they come from, especially if it's in a hot spot. Don't tell us who you're barrack for. There are tightenings of restrictions, as you well know, in life. No more umming and ahhing. No, that's a good question, Whitey. Now, how are we this morning? Or telling us where the big dog is in the queue. We don't care what your favourite topic is, Grammar. But if you can call in, as the Premier says, you must call in. All postcodes are welcome. It's an inclusive quiz. No one is locked out of the Whitey Award famous 7-question quiz. We'll give you a hint if we need to, because that's what sometimes we need to do, Rammer, so get your thinking caps on with some quiz action. But Adam, it's a quiz. It's questions and answers. That's over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Daniel. As you said earlier in the week, the quiz was in a little bit of trouble. I was starting to run out of questions, and we were wondering what we're going to do moving forward. But the quality of the questions this week have been so high, I think we can keep it going.
I don't think so. This might be the last quiz. If you want to go down in history as the winner of the last quiz on The Breakfast Club, today is your day, 1-300-652-927.
I'd be really disappointed if that's the case, to be honest. I'm just trying to work out. Yeah, okay. One of the questions I was a bit worried about, but I've confirmed it's okay. We can continue.
Right.
All right, let's go. It's been a terrible start today for me. What's that?
Is that what you're doing this morning, just getting your quiz questions right?
1-300-652-927. The questions today are relevant to what's going on at the moment. So it's a bit of a sort of, we're not sort of going back into history. There's no who am I's as such. This is just a roundabout. If you're on top of the news of the moment, you should get all of these correct. Okay?
Okay.
Just put that out there. Damien from Cranbourne is going to start off this morning. Damien, good morning.
Good morning, boys. How are we this morning?
Damo,
you're
fantastic.
On the road again. We're never sure, Damien. You're sometimes on the road. Sometimes you're from Cranbourne.
Yeah, I'm just going on the way to work, boys.
Okay, no worries, Damien. The Cats had a big win last night over Brisbane at the SCG. What was the final margin? No, it wasn't 28 points. Very close to 28 points, but it wasn't 28 points.
Couldn't be much closer.
Justin from Glenroy, good morning.
How are we?
Good, Jazzy.
Very well, thank you. Geelong won by how many points last night?
27.
Very good, Justin. Very good. Cowboys in the NRL last night. The Cowboys got belted by 26 points. By which team?
Oh, shit.
Hang on, don't say anything just yet. Don't say anything just yet. I didn't hear any answer there, Juzzy. I think you're okay. Now, Rama, have you got a quiz for a man?
Have I got a quiz?
Oh. What are you talking about?
Roosters.
Justin, this quiz is just completely derailed.
What's that? This is about all of us.
What's that?
Everyone following the simplest of rules.
It's just a question. It was just a hint for a man.
Yeah. Not happy with that. Anyway, Justin, question number three.
Yep.
The PGA is playing this week, and they're playing in the Workday Charity Open at Muirfield Village. Now, it's usually the Memorial, which is going to be played in a couple of weeks' time at the same golf course, but we're at Muirfield Village in Ohio. Now, it's designed, and essentially it's owned by a legend. Who is this legend?
The PGA Memorial.
Yeah, so whose golf tournament is that?
Tiger Woods.
Not Tiger Woods. Now, this is a shocking question, and I understand that.
Maybe explain what you mean a little bit better.
Well, I tried and I failed. Nick from Bendigo, good morning.
What are you talking?
Hello, Nico.
Now, I really don't want to have to say this question again. Do you know the answer?
I agree. It is shocking. I'm stunned. Also, David Hasselhoff.
We were going to work
David
through this.
Hasselhoff.
We were going to work through this together.
1-300-652-927.
We were going to work
Trent
through
from
it.
Ballarat. Trent, good morning.
G'day, Whitey. Can I have the question again?
All right, we're playing. And I know and understand that so many Victorians, perhaps all Victorians, want this to be over.
Arnold Palmer.
Close. He's
the
close.
Other one.
He's understanding it. John from Richmond. Good morning, John. Are you there, John? No, John's not
John
there.
John said to say hello.
Even getting better. James from Camperdown. Good morning, James.
How
are
you going?
All James, right. We're playing at Muirfield Village at the moment in Ohio. It's a very famous golf course. It's designed by a legend. In a couple of weeks' time, they'll have the memorial where it's this legend's golf tournament. Who is it?
Is it
Arnold Palmer.
Oh dear. Dear. And it doesn't
is an all time low.
And it doesn't get any better here, boys, because Big Dog's on the line.
Oh,
Big Dog is on the line.
Can we give a clue? Can we please give a clue?
Well, we're just gonna
we have.
I didn't hear the clue. Can I have it again, please?
No. Well, it's not Arnold Palmer. It's the other one. The answer.
He's the greatest golfer of all time. Outside Tiger Woods.
If he was a colour, he'd be golden, they reckon.
Jeez, I was going to say Tom Watson.
This.
Like, lockdown's hard enough for me at the moment. Like, it's hard enough. This
right,
is not helping.
Dog's gone. Sebastian's in the middle of the city. Sebastian, good morning.
Oh, my God.
Can I give another clue?
Sebastian, do you need a clue here?
Yeah, I'll give you the question, sorry.
Oh, gee.
Just say Jack Nicklaus, Sebastian.
Okay, yeah. Say Jack Nicklaus's name.
The bear, Jack Nicklaus.
Hey!
Well done. Good answer. Well done. That? Thought that through.
Some of the
thought
insights are fantastic for our listeners.
My clue was going to be it's what Whitey does in the middle of each year. He hibernates for about 5 weeks, usually, doesn't he, Hub?
Very funny.
Look at him.
Okay. We're only up to question four, which is a bit of a setback. Who top scored for England in the first innings with 43 against the West Indies overnight?
Mitch Stokes.
Very good. I reckon that might have been a guess, but that
100%
was 100%
guess.
All right. An AFL question. Andrew Phillips will ruck again for the Bombers against North Melbourne tomorrow night. What two other AFL clubs has he played for? Or which two other AFL clubs has he played for?
GWS and Carl.
Good. It was a long pause, I guess. I thought you were going to bomb out on us.
Yeah, no, he's still there. Okay, question six. The A-League looks like it's finally found a way to get the season back going again after the CEO found a way with government. Who is the CEO of the A-League?
Not David Gallop.
Incorrect.
Gee, this is sort of
this is a tough one. This is a tough question.
Think about your clue, Rammer. Think about your clues here.
Where are we going next? Because I'm just going to check something here. I reckon I might have got this wrong.
Pauline's in Pasco Vale. She's on the line. Good morning, Pauline.
Good morning.
We'll do what we can to help you. This is a shambles at the moment. We'll see how we go.
Well, it's not a shambles. That's being unfair. Who is the CEO of the A-League?
James Jordan.
James Johnson is the CEO of the FFA.
Pauline, that was a really good...
That's an excellent answer.
Are you still there, Pauline?
Yeah, I am.
Have another go. We'll give you a chance.
Oh. Okay. I've no idea.
I was going to help you out too, Pauline.
Oh,
I was going to help you out.
Jack
Sorry,
from Q.
Pauline.
Good morning, Jack.
Hey, boys.
Okay, who is...
Well, we don't know.
Who is the CEO of the A-League?
It's not James Johnson, the FFA guy.
No, that's right. It's not him. So that's not his answer. That's not his answer. You can't bang him. Is he still there? Right, Jack. If you were to say, let's just pick a name, Rammer, Greg O'Rourke.
Yeah.
It was Greg O'Rourke.
Good answer.
Well done, Jack.
Well done.
Thought so.
This last question better be good because I think it's your last ever.
This could be it.
Well, it's unprecedented because we're going back to back. Soccer questions.
Oh. This could be Jack. Did it want to be good?
The Matildas goalkeeper has just signed a 1-year deal with Arsenal. What is Australia's goalkeeper's name?
Uh, Linda Williams.
Well, hang on a sec. Can you say that again?
Lydia Williams, was it?
Correct!
I think there might have been an alteration, but we'll take it! Pretty sure Lydia came out early. But Lydia Williams is the Matilda's goalkeeper, and she is off to Arsenal, and you are the winner. Well done, Jack. Magnificent title. You are possibly and hopefully the last winner of the world-famous seven-question quiz. You got the $100 gift voucher. Thanks to Jason Johnson and the team at Dynamic. Well, our lane is finding winners and helping our punters narrow the focus for the next major metropolitan meeting on the weekend in Victoria. It's Caulfield tomorrow, and we have a look at the quality leagues amongst other things. We give you a chance to just drill down a bit on those numbers and give yourself a chance to get your heads around what you might want to do with your strategy with the quality. The formula bet also will come up through the morning as well, and the Ramaruffi, as has been mentioned, is a phenomenon on the global stage at the moment, and we'll find you a winner there hopefully as well. Let's start with race 6 tomorrow, the first leg of the quad. It's over the 2,000 metres, Dino, and just not too far down from the top. Right You Are for D. Oliver and Mick Price and Mick Kent Jr. is favourite in a big field. Big field again tomorrow at tab.com.au, around about $2.50.
Yeah, and he's the starting point for me, Daniel. He's in terrific form. He won at Werribee, then he won at Caulfield. He was beaten last start, but the horse that beat him, Persan, won again on last Saturday, the Mahogany Final, and he's drawn the outside gate. I think last start he was ridden quietly and ran home, and I think Damien Oliver will do the same here. And I think he's the one to beat. I think the three that are basically in the handicap, numbers 1, 2, and 3, the rest are on the minimum weight. I think they stand out a bit from the rest. Thought of that, Group 2 winner at this track and distance. Probably lost his way there for a little bit, but his last run was most encouraging, and you know he's going to be in the run. He'll be out in front. And 3 grand to Flora. A filly that's come over from New Zealand for Danny O'Brien has won 3 of her 4 runs and is going tremendously well and looks as though this trip will suit. So I think they've got a fair margin on the rest. So we're going pretty light the first couple of legs and starting with this one.
All right. Well, the markets would suggest that those three at the top, Quinny, have most of the interest of the punters as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right You Are, despite the wide draw, clearly the best back runner, 280 into 250. Grand Flora, a 340 second to leg short of that on the next line of betting at 650, just out ever so slightly from $6. Just on board of that, Dino, were you watching the runs this preparation up until the second last start behind Heavenly Empress, thinking maybe hadn't come back as well? Because, or was it more of a case of waiting for him to get over more ground? Because when he got to 2,000 last time, he was so good winning the Norman Robinson.
No, well, I think he had a problem after the Derby, and then he had the 2 plain runs, and he paid the ultimate price. He was gelded, so he's now a racehorse rather than thinking about other things. And his first up run was very good, so he's only got to run to his best form, and he'd win this race. That run was, looking at the figures, probably still a bit below his best, but yeah, he's right in this race.
So Rama, you get an early reprieve here. It's a very easy start for you, yes, in terms of your number taking. You've got one job around here. Can you please give the punters the numbers in the first leg tomorrow, race number 6 at Caulfield?
2, 1, and 3.
2, 1, 3. We're going short early doors, which means there might be a chance to open the arms up a little bit later on. Let's have a look at race 7. Nice race on the program too. The St. John Monash Stakes. Plenty of history in this race, Dina. And we've got 9 going around tomorrow for the St. John Monash Stakes. And, well, I reckon there'll be plenty of love for a couple of horses here. And if my computer screen didn't freeze, I'd tell you who was favourite. But you can do it and lead us into your numbers for the second leg.
Yeah, I think Viridine's the one to beat. Interested to see. He hasn't been scratched as yet. I wondered with the travel restrictions whether he'd actually come down for this race. But if he's here tomorrow, I think he'll be winning. His win last start was outstanding, and he looks to be just in really good form, and he's well-placed here to beat 9 Grey Shadow, a mare I've got a lot of time for, at 1,100 at Caulfield. She's had 5 goes at the 1,100 at Caulfield for 4 wins, so this is her track and distance, and the old Marvel Jungle Edge himself. The rain comes, it certainly enhances his prospects, probably soft enough already. He's the other winning chance. But Viridine's the one to beat. Where I think Grey Shadow's probably the value of those 3 runners.
Well, Grey Shadow's $9.50 there, so a bit of value. Viridine, a $2.60 second elite on Jungle Edge, Dino. He's an 11-time winner on soft ground. It is currently listed as soft. What sort of track do you reckon it will start?
Oh, it just depends on what the next 24 hours brings. But there'll be Jar out of the track, and he trialled very well on Monday, so he's ready to go again after that run in Sydney where he ran well. I just thought they made a lot of use of him in that race, and he weakened late, but he trialled up very well Monday morning. So Mick Bell, he knows him so well how to get him into peak fitness, and he looks as though he's there again.
You've got Tavistan, I'm Someone, Intuition and Snitchcraft all coming through the VRC sprints on the quick backup. You've just seen that form race is not quite as strong as tomorrow's affair.
Yeah, three of those are. Intuition ran in a heat, and the other three. Tavistan, I'm surprised he ran last week and wasn't safe just for this race, but he could bounce back, I'd imagine, and I Am Someone's probably the next of those. I think his run last week was okay, and there'll be good speed in this race, which will always suit him, along with a horse like Ashlaw. So, look, it's a good competitive race, but I think we can narrow it down.
All right, Rama, what are those numbers, please, for the second leg of the quaddie?
2, 9, and 1.
2, 9, 1 for race number 7, the Sir John Monash Stakes. Race number 8 is the third leg of the quaddie. It's over the 1,100 metres for the 3-year-old fillies, Dino. There's a full field of 16 going around. We've got an emergency there just in case for David Brightack and Billy Egan in Moscon. But at this stage, we don't go far down the top of the order again to see Sizzlefly first up for Philip Stokes with favouritism at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a case of if it's not Sizzlefly, then it's very, very open. So we are going to take a few in this leg, but she's the starting point. Very good fresh, handles the wet. Her recent jump out at Pakenham was outstanding. She's ready to go. I think she'll be hard to beat the dangers. I think 8 Chassis is a very smart filly. She looks to have trialled up nicely for her first up run. Damien Oliver to rides a plus. 4 Bless Her is building a really good record. She's won her past 3, and she handles all ground and will be probably fitter for that last run. She'd had a break between runs, so she's a chance. 11 Finesse Tess, and just was back to the inside when you had to be off the rail at Sandown and may have just needed that run first up. I think she'll be competitive, but I'm going to throw in the stablemate of Sizzlefly and That Girl, who is at least very strong at the end of 1,100 and was probably in the worst ground at Flemington. And a maiden winner here, number 13, No Frontiers. She looks a smart filly. Only won a Bairnsdale on debut, but looked to go very well. I'll be putting her in the quaddie as well. But Sizzlefly is the one that they've all got to beat.
Quinny, if it's not Sizzlefly, it could be anyone, says Dino. What's the market say?
Yeah, Sizzlefly a drifting favourite, 390 out to 460. Bless Her a $6 second leg. The market mover isn't one that Dino's included in the mark in the quaddie. Number 2, Flowstar, who's been 950 into 7. Dino, she won at Bendigo and Sale before being nabbed on the post in Adelaide last start. What's your little niggle there?
1,100 metres, and if the track comes up on the softer side, I think she's a filly that runs very quick time and does it from the front over 1,000. So I just think the challenge of 1,100 and maybe on softish ground, that might be a bridge too far for her.
Quinny, I reckon you've missed a little story here. If it's not Sizzlefly, it's sort of opened up, says Dino. And number 8, Chassis, who he has selected as his second elect here in the third leg of the quaddie, is what price, please, at tab.com.au?
Currently a $14 chance, Daniel.
Right. Okay. All right, now we're playing ball. $14 for number 8 if you can't get the 460 for Sizzlefly, number 1 there in the third leg. Rama, you've required a bit more ink for this one. What have you got for us, please, third leg?
1, 8, 4, 11, 3, and 13.
1, 8, 4, 11, 3, 13. Dino, if you were going to get a bit sexy with your quaddie tomorrow or have a second one, would you just go with Sizzlefly as a one out of this league?
No, I think probably I'd go with her, Chassis, and Bless Her, just the three of those. I think if you want to have a little trim-up quaddie, they're the three I'd be playing, numbers 1, 8, and 4.
It's a toolbox handicap. I'm not sure what that means, but 1,700 metres, benchmark 84 affair, full field going around, and it looks like, in fact, there are lots of emergencies too, ready to roll here. A couple of scratchings, and number 7, Safin, is out. Number 9, Salon du Cheval, is out as well, which means Lord Durant in Surreal Image will get a start. And at tab.com.au, Paddy Payne and Billy Egan combined for the favourite at the moment, Dino. Number 14, Triple Strip out of Barrier 12.
Yeah, and she has got a very good chance, Daniel. Her first run for the stable was very good at Flemington recently. I think she's one of the good hopes in the race. But I like One at Odds here in He Excels, number 8, who's first up from a spell. Has got some good Caulfield form, has trialled up well, has run in better races than this. And I just think the intent there with a claim for young Campbell Rewilla and gets in pretty well at the weight. So I think He Excels has got a terrific hope here to beat 14 Triple Strip, as mentioned, ran really well at Flemington. 10 Declares War, freshened up, has got a chance. 6 Heavenly Emperor, it was a good win last start. It was a smart ride, pushed forward and made his own luck. Can run well again, but little chances to 11 Dogmatic, who's stable mate of my top selection. And now that the scratchings have come through and Surreal Image is in the field, I'll be putting him in as well. So it's a tough finish, but I think He Excels will run very well.
Righto. Quinny, what's the market saying? Triple Strip the favourite, but Dino's gone around it. What's that look like from your end?
Well, Daniel, I was about to kick off by talking about Jessica Simpson being a regular in Hart Farm when I used to write that, but I think we will stick with the new lead, and that is He Excels, Dino's on top selection, currently $23.
What? On top selection is $23.
He Excels a $23 chance, and it's just gone to $21, and I'm looking forward to seeing that market absolutely hemorrhage in the next 15 minutes or so. So punters, and by punters I mean Daniel Harford, Adam White, and punters, click quickly, because that will not last. He Excels there has already firmed in the last 30 seconds or so. So this will be interesting to see and give us something to talk about when I come back on in half an hour.
Oh boy, that is good business. So 23 into 21 really quickly. Is there money for anything else? Because there will be for that.
Yeah, no doubt there will be. There's been a little bit of money for a couple at the top of the market. Heavenly Emperor's been $6 into $5.50. Triple Strip a $4.80 chance. You know, there's also been again a little bit of specking for a runner that's maybe underwhelmed and has just come out in the last 30 seconds to go seven. So I won't ask you about that.
Yeah, no, he can't win.
At least I checked the scratches for once. But look, it's all about He Excels, and I wouldn't mind having $5 if I've been to Ramarapi with your half.
Well, I'll be having $5 on that. I might even have $5 on $6 the place as well. That's what I might do. That sounds good to me.
I'll ask Dino what sort of price he thinks He Excels should be. Because no doubt he'll be heavily back between now and the start of the race. What sort of SP do you anticipate, and what should the right SP be, Dino?
I don't know what he'll SP at, but I've got him marked around a $10 chance. So I think carry the one. Yeah, we're copping overs. Yep.
and no one loves overs more than us, Dino. We love a bit of overs action here on the Friday form. Okay, so that's the quaddie done. Ramo, can you please read us the numbers again? Because you know what's happened. Someone's just woken up. Nigel Carmody's been listening, and he's dropped his pen, and he hasn't had a chance to take the numbers down. Can you help him out, please?
Okay, race 6, 2, 1, and 3. Race 7, 2, 9, and 1. Race 8, 1, 8, 4, 11, 3, and 13. And then race 9, 8, 14, 10, 6, 11, and 18.
And 18 to finish off the quaddie. So they are the numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield, of course. So we'll talk a bit more about that tomorrow morning on the panel with Dino and the crew as well. Make sure you're listening for that. I've got a feeling I might know where the Ramarapi goes, so we'll get that out of the way, Dino. Could I hazard a guess as it being He Excels?
Yes, you'd be pretty much on the money there, Daniel. I think you were fairly confident it was going to be race 8 chassis, but I've trumped you with He Excels in the last race 9, number 8.
I might just have a little dollar on the double too, just in case.
You better.
Just in case, Dino. Quinn, are you still there?
I am, and it's already firmed into $16.
Brilliant. What about the power of our man, Dan Lester? 23 into 16 in 4 minutes. That's going to tumble in. That's number 8 in race 9. He Excels. I'm going to get involved with Dino's Ramarapi. What's about the formula bet? Dino, what's happening this week in the formula bet?
Yeah, for Greg Keady of Crayola. Greg, we're going to have $40 to win on race 1, number 3, Efflorescence. $40 to win race 6, number 2, Right You Are, and $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 1, number 3, into race 6, number 2. That's for Greg Keady of Kyalla.
Just wonder if it's Hamish Hartlett's birthday. We'll ask him. He's on the line, the forward from the Port Adelaide Power. He's ready to roll. Hello, Hamish.
G'day, fellas. Thanks for having me. Nah, not quite my birthday just yet. I've got to wait till mid-August. So not far away. But I turned a big 3-0 this year as well. So
oh, righty-o. Right, 14th of August, you'll be turning 30. Good luck to you. How are you going to spend it in lockdown, in quarantine? What do you call it? The hubs these days.
Yeah, well, I've been having this conversation with my family the last couple of days about what I can do, because obviously we're under restrictions ourselves as footy players that are a bit different to the general public, I suppose. So I might have to wait a couple of months till the footy season's finished, and then things are a bit more relaxed. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Who knows what the world's going to look like at that point in time. We'll wait and see.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, just worry about it later on, I reckon. Speaking of worrying about things later on, you obviously got the Giants coming up on Sunday. How much focus and review was done on the game against Brisbane? Because it was probably, you've been so good up until that point, and then Brisbane did a bit of a number on you. What did Kenny do with the boys in terms of the review of that game?
Look, it was fairly simple. We got beaten up a little bit around the footy, the contested footy. So I think we started that game pretty well. First quarter, we had sort of 7 or 8 scoring shots, but only kicked the one goal. And we're playing pretty good footy. But there was a period definitely throughout the second and third quarters that we didn't quite measure up to Brisbane in terms of the pressure and physicality around the footy. Sort of put us on the back foot a bit, and our defenders really didn't win enough battles at their end of the ground either. So a couple of things to take out of it for sure, but another opportunity against a great team this weekend to prove we're capable of being competitive in that area of the game.
So does Hamish...
You go, Whitey, you go.
So does it dent the confidence at all? You've been playing such a proactive attacking brand of footy that you have the loss. You know, will it dent the confidence at all to keep playing the way you've been playing, or you think you'll be okay?
I think we'll be okay. We've sort of played 5 or 6 games prior to that, including the pre-season stuff that we're really happy with and took a lot of confidence out of. So we're talking probably 2 quarters of football that we didn't quite have right, and we understand why we didn't have that right. But we're still very, very confident in the way we play our football, and we get to showcase that again this weekend.
So then, Hamish, was it spoken about tempo? Because you talk about the pressure around the football, yep, but when teams have their period of dominance, is it about you guys changing your tempo? Because as Whitey said, you play such an up-tempo style of game. You're a high-possession team, high-scoring team, high inside 50. Did you just have to slow the game down at periods last week?
Yeah, no doubt about it. We spoke about that yesterday, about when the backs are against the wall a little bit. How can we do things in-game to be able to change that momentum? And certainly the tempo of the footy was something that was spoken about, so simply sort of finding a mark, I guess, and then slowing things down from there where possible. But it almost got to the point last week where we didn't even get an opportunity to find a mark. It was Brisbane coming straight out of centre bounce and kicking goals, and so it was really difficult to wrestle that momentum back. But something we're aware of going forward for sure.
The club itself looks like it's really excelled within the hub at the moment. The way you've gone about playing your football, the way you've really embraced what's happening with the game of AFL at the moment. What are the little things that you're doing during the week? Now, it doesn't necessarily need to be within the group, but how are you connecting better as a team? Because it looks like your connection out on the field is really good at the moment.
Yeah, I think what we did right from the outset was we understood and confronted that it was going to be a challenging sort of couple of weeks while we were up in the hub. I think from there, we identified some issues that might arise. We tried to take care of them prior to actually going over there. And then we saw it really as an opportunity to go in with a positive mindset to really take advantage of the situation, whereas some other teams possibly might not have. Seeing it as a bit of a distraction or a deterrent from what they might try and achieve, we actually went the other way with it and thought, right, we can make this a real positive for us and our group in that connection space as well. And I think that mindset alone probably held us in really good stead for the couple of weeks that we were there. And obviously when you're winning, that kind of makes things a bit easier as well. So, full credit to Vossie and Kenny and Chris Davies, who really drove that mindset, I guess, and we sort of carried it through while we were there.
Hamish, explain to our listeners what it's like for you in a hub and how it all works. We've spoken to a lot of Victorian-based clubs this week, but you're obviously a little bit different with the fact that you're from South Australia. How does it all work for you?
Yeah, so essentially, we got over there and basically the only things we were allowed to do other than train and play, obviously, boys got an exemption to play some golf, which was great. You're allowed to sort of go out and get a takeaway coffee or a feed if you wanted to, and then go and do some, go for a walk or go for a jog down near the beach. So that pretty much the three activities that kept us entertained. We had almost like a little arcade set up there, which a few of the boys got involved in pretty heavily, and some of the coaches for that matter too. And then, a little bit of sort of PlayStation, music and university and that type of stuff to keep us busy. So, boys certainly relished the opportunity to get out and train and get outside a little bit. But as I mentioned, we kind of went in with a really positive mindset. The boys connected really well as a group while we were there, and we had a great experience with it.
Boomer, good morning.
Oh, hey, sorry, boys.
Mate. How's your week been? Because from what I can see, you've woken up and you're in your house. So you're not in Hubville. What's going on?
Correct. No, I'm not in Hubville. Probably the reason is I'm a part-time coach, only working 3 days a week. So to go away and work 7 days a week for maybe 6 weeks probably wasn't feasible for the football club. Probably didn't have enough money to pay me, to tell you the truth, Daniel. I would have liked to be up in sunny Queensland, because it's freezing again in Melbourne, but not to be. So I'll just take a short period of time off, spend some time with my kids, and unfortunately homeschool them again, and go from there and wait for the boys to get back. And as soon as they get back, launch back into to my part of my job.
What's happened to the Kangas, Boomer?
Well, I'd love to be able to tell you, Whitey, but I'm not 100% sure. Last week, I thought they were really flat, and you can't... I mean, people say, oh, yeah, they found out the news that they're going to the hub, but you know what? So did the Western Bulldogs, so did every other Melbourne team, so we're certainly not using that as an excuse. We had some good players, but we just haven't had... I think when North Melbourne play well, 17 or 18 of them will play really well, and it's a collective. Unfortunately, last week we had 4 or 5 players play well, and the rest were passengers last week. And yeah, we can't do that. Not too many teams in the competition can do that. But at the minute, we're so young and raw still, we certainly can't do that.
Are you worried about Ben Cunnington and where he's at with his back?
Am I worried? I'm not worried. Ben's a very, very good player, and he's very professional. He'll get away now and work out what needs to be done for him to play some good footy. Should have he played last week? In hindsight, no. But I sat with him the first 2 weeks in a box watching the football, and regardless of how he felt, he was probably going to play, because he felt that he was wasted sitting in there. But as we've seen last week, he wasn't in great shape to be able to move. But he actually trained during the week and thought he was okay. And then all of a sudden, straight away, that the back sort of gave way, and he wasn't much chop for us in the end, was he?
No, he wasn't much good, unfortunately, for the Kangas. And we'll see how they rebound this week. How much does that sort of sting, Boomer, when one of your guns comes in and you haven't been playing well, and you sort of need them to really impact the game, and they're not quite right, and you can see it early, and you know that you're not going to get the most out of them? How much does that hurt the psyche of the group, do you reckon?
So I think losing a player in general, regardless of who it is, with rotations, especially an on-baller, hurts the group straight away, but you're probably talking more about the mental side of it. There's no doubt we look at Ben Cunnington, he's certainly our best three players, if not he's the best player at the Kangaroos, and certainly in the most important bracket. He's when that goes off, the other on-ballers no doubt would look at it and think, gee, we've got our work cut out today. And then he went forward and he still couldn't move too well. And in the end, he just sat on the bench for the rest of the game. So there's no doubt that they would have looked at that and thought that they needed to lift. And in the end, they didn't lift anyway. So they'll bounce back. They'll bounce back. They'll have 22 fit people this week, whoever takes the field. There's never any excuses, Half. You know that, mate. If Ben Cunnington runs out, you say he's fit and he's ready to go. That was a decision that everybody made and he played. And in the end, it didn't work out for him. For us.
That is true. But, yes, us. Jump on board. Jump on board. Don't jump off just yet, Boomer. Now, no. Last week there was a tightening of the interpretation of the holding the ball. And
I'm glad you noticed this last night, Half.
And the like. That was seemed to be the flavour of the week for last week. Last night, I couldn't help but think, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, that there seemed to be a very, very high spike in the number of not 15 kicking distance adjudications made by the umpires. Was I the only one to notice that last night?
No, definitely. I'm with you there.
Yep.
Oh, I'm with you. I think there's a lot of footballers out there right now that say they don't watch Thursday night football or don't watch Friday night football. Well, tune in because they do everything on that first game. It's the first one. Whatever the umpires are going to do for that weekend, they do it on the first game of football, and that's Thursday night football. And 100% agree. I'm not sure about having Razor Ray mic'd up because, gee, he talks a lot and probably don't need that out in the field. But you got a great interpretation of absolutely that, Half. The kicks weren't going far enough, and I was just calling play on to make the game be a little bit faster and not congested enough.
I really, really liked it, Whitey. I thought last night, for the first time in a long, long time, those little 5, 8, 10-metre kicks were just all called play on. And it did. I felt it made the game flow because there's a lot of times where, that they took the mark and it was a play on. They had to just go quickly. They had no choice, obviously. They had to just go quickly and the ball was constantly moving.
I think it's a great rule, but the problem is it's almost impossible to administer. So if you were to take it out to 20 or to 25 metres, that's a very hard rule for the umpires to officiate. It's much easier when it's 15 or whether it's, you know, as soon as you get to 20 to 25 metres, to try and work out what is 20 or 25 metres is very difficult. So that's the hardest part about if you were to extend it from 15 further out. But there was certainly last night, there was no doubt that it was a crackdown.
That's what they would train, though. They would train 15 metre kicks at training at the minute, the umpires, I'm sure, to say, yep, that's far enough. They would just change that to 20, wouldn't they, and make it quite easy for themselves.
It's hard to, but one of my points is it's hard to estimate what 20 metres is, whether it's 18, whether it's 22, compared to,
say, 13. It's the same with 15. It's the same with 15. Is it 13? Is it 12? Is it 16?
Like, yeah.
It's the same thing that just applies to a different number. But my thing with it is you're better off erring on the side of it being too short, a 15-metre kick. Play, if you're not quite sure, call it play on. And there was a bit of an overreaction last night because sometimes as it left the boot, the umpire called not 15, which was interesting.
At least they called it early enough that the players knew before the ball was taken in the hands that he knew he was going to have to get rid of it. You know what I mean? Like they were making the call early.
Yeah, I just think whether you actually officially make it 20 metres or not, but that's what should be almost your guide as opposed to the 15, which becomes 10. Let's make it the 20, which becomes 15, and we get back to where we probably should be with that ruling.
Oh, what I've always wondered is it, so the player takes a mark, goes back off his mark, so is it the distance from where he kicks it, or is it the distance from the mark?
From where you kick it.
From where he kicks it, yep.
Yeah. The ball needs to travel the distance, not from the mark, but from the foot.
Yeah. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.